It's time for Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Have you ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living? Then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Every week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. Guests will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. Every show is a dose of inspiration. This is Success Profiles Radio. And now, here's your host, Brian K. Wright.
Hello and welcome to Success Profiles Radio. I'm your host, Brian K. Wright, and it's an absolute pleasure to be with you here today. I'm honored that you chose to spend part of your day with me here, and this is going to be a fantastic and amazing show. I will introduce my guest in a moment. I promise we're going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to learn some things along the way, too. And if you've been with me for any length of time, you know that I usually like to take a minute or two to share some things I've been learning and thinking about, and I typically do this every single week. I've had a lot of things on my mind recently, but one exercise I occasionally come back to is something that stretches my imagination. When I lived in Arizona, there was a Walmart store in Mesa that relocated to a much better location, which left a 50,000 square foot building completely empty. So here's my question for you to think about. If you had 50,000 square feet of commercial space available, what would you do with it? What would generate the most money? Would you reopen as another retail space? Would you divide it up and create a space with multiple uses? Would you open a gym? Would you make it an office space complex? Would you create an amusement center? Or would you sell it? What would you do with 50,000 square feet of commercial space? Think about stuff like this and think about that question. It's a great exercise in expanding your thoughts and thinking bigger than you ever have before. I've been listening to Audible a lot lately, and everything I've been listening to has been very expansive. And so I love questions like this. They allow you to think bigger, and the bigger your world gets, you'll truly believe that you live in a big world full of possibilities and you can do and be anything you want when you think like this. And if you have not picked up my latest book, it's called The Greatest Lessons I Learned from My Coach. It's on Amazon. It's selling very well, and I'm very, very happy and pleased with that. So go ahead and pick that up, and I would be very honored if you would do that. My guest this week is Scott Duffy. This is his fourth appearance on my show. I don't know if he knows that or not, but it is. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Scott Duffy is an entrepreneur and keynote speaker. He is the founder of AI Mavericks. He sold a prior company to Richard Branson's Virgin Company. He's also held leadership roles at FoxSports.com, NBC Internet, and CBS Sportsline. He started his career working for Tony Robbins, and he's listed as a top 10 speaker by Entrepreneur.com. He has also spoken at the New York Stock Exchange and provided commentary in numerous media outlets, including CNBC, Fox News, and CBS Radio. He serves as a catalyst for creating breakthroughs for his clients, and he's also a multiple-time best-selling author. I cannot wait to unwrap and unravel as much of this as we can in an hour. So, Scott Duffy, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're back.
You know how much I love to be here. It's been too long.
It has been too long.
But, Brian, before we start, I have to ask you, what would you do with 50,000 square feet?
I think I would want it to be a multi-use scenario, because if we have something like COVID again, I would want this to be as recession-proof as possible. So I would probably have something retail-based. I would probably have something office space-based and maybe something entertainment-based. I think that would be the best thing that I would do with it.
Awesome.
What would you do with it?
You know, I think the first thing I do is look into building self-storage, like public self-storage there.
Yeah.
Because I know the closer self-storage gets to Main Street, right, the better typically that business opportunity is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you have a COVID or you have something else, it's a business that tends to hold up really well during times like that.
Yeah. I love that answer, because it's not really super hands-on, and it's passive because people leave their stuff month after month, and sometimes they forget that it's even there until they pay the bill again, and they just don't want to deal with it, so they'll just keep it there until they figure out what to do with it. So it's awesome. I love that.
It's like it's the original SaaS business, right? Yeah. You pay every month and you set it and you forget it, which is actually, the more we're talking about this, the more I want to go to my storage and clean it out, right? Like probably so many people listening. And you know, stop hitting, but you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things.
Yeah. In fact, before I moved back to Iowa a couple of years ago, I had stuff in storage that I'd been paying for quite a while. And I realized that if I wasn't going back to my storage, that I didn't really need most of the stuff that was there anyway. So it was not hard for me to get rid of most of it. I loved it.
Good stuff.
Absolutely. So the first question I love asking is, did you envision early on that you would be where you are right now?
I think that's such a big question. So where I am right now with my life, with my kids, with my business. I mean, there's so many things in my life that, you know, I'm just so happy about where I am right now. And then there's other things, you know, there's other areas that I'm always constantly trying to, you know, work on. I think like all of us, you know, right now, I think the biggest challenge in my life is raising two teenage daughters. Mm. So I think that the answer to your question is I never thought I'd be, when I was a kid, where I am right now, raising two teenage daughters in an era of social media, when it's just it's so tough. And there's so many things that these girls experience every day that I didn't when I was growing up, that you didn't when you were growing up, right. Because of the technology. And so I think that's probably not only the greatest challenge, but the greatest opportunity. And I really believe that today as parents, especially, you know, as a dad with young girls, I don't have boys. So with young girls, you know, the more we can instill a sense of confidence and self-esteem in our kids, the better. And probably it's probably even more important, more valuable than it was, Brian, when we were kids, you know, just because of all the stuff that they get on social and the friend groups and this and that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk a little bit about what your path looked like prior to what you're doing now. You got to work for Tony Robbins when you were in your early 20s, right?
I did. I was first hired by Tony when I was 20. Yeah, actually, I was 20. He was 30. I think he's 10 years older than I am. Mm. So we were both really, really young.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I think that the funniest, or not really funny, but the way that all that happened was, I was a young guy. I was going to school at the University of San Diego, mm-hmm. and we kind of had this tradition where at the end of our midterm exams each semester, so twice a year, we like all jump into our cars and we'd head and a lot of the groups and the clubs and the sororities and fraternities and just different student groups would do this. They would go down to San Felipe, Mexico, and just spend like 3 or 4 days just having a great time. That's like a 9-hour drive. It's like 9 hours south of the border. My third year of college, my junior year, I just finished my exams early. And so I was going to go down early and set up. And I was driving the car. I was with three other people. I was actually in the front passenger seat. And we were going about 90 miles an hour along this really kind of like empty, desolate road on one of those old kind of like Mexican federal highways. And we hit a truck and we got in an accident going like a zillion miles an hour. And, you know, up to that point, it was the worst day of my life. I had two brain hemorrhages. I had to drop out of school to recover. It was really tough. And during that time, I pretty much just laid in my bed down at South Mission Beach all day, every day. And one of my roommates came in one day and he had a motivational book on tape. Mm-hmm. And his dad was the head of marketing, the vice president of marketing for Nissan USA. And he said, my dad thinks you should listen to this. Mm. And I started listening. It was a tape. So for all of you young people listening, like, again, going back, we're talking like pre-MP3, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking pre-iTunes. So it was a motivational book on tape from a guy named Dennis Waitley.
Mm.
And I started listening to Dennis. I felt totally inspired. And then I picked up another tape and another tape. And then before I bought it, you know, I bought this thing from like Tony Robbins was selling this 30-day program. And so when I got better, I decided that I wanted to go and work as an intern for anybody that I listened to. And back then, San Diego was like the Silicon Valley of speakers. They just kind of all live there.
Yeah.
And the first person I applied to intern for was Tony, but instead he gave me this job. And so I ended up going on the road. And I think that kind of the moral of the story, you know, kind of is this, is that, you know, whether it was me going down the road with this accent or for people who are listening, sometimes you go down a road and mm-hmm. maybe you're doing everything right. Like maybe the business, you've got the perfect plan, you've got the perfect team, you execute flawlessly, and then something out of nowhere comes and it knocks you off course. And like everything that you did to that point, by the way, it could be the economy, it could be health, it could be something happened with a parent, like, and everything you did up to that point, you got to throw out and start over. Mm-hmm. Well, that was kind of what happened to me. And that's kind of what happens to a lot of us at different points in our lives. But I think the lesson I learned from Tony is this. One day I was sharing this story with him, and he said, Scott, he said, you have good days in life and you have bad days. But you don't know which is which until sometime way down the line, because you don't know what you'll make of the experience.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the lesson from the whole thing.
I love that. I love that. You also started a private charter company called Smart Charter that you later sold to Richard Branson.
Yes, I sold it to Virgin. Yeah. So that was a really interesting experience. I mean, I had some really awesome mentors when I was a young guy working up in Silicon Valley. I worked for CEOs that were super visionary, super abundant. And one of the common threads among them was they were really strategic at partnering. So what they believed was that when you're an early stage company, if you wanted to grow and you wanted to distribute your content faster, get it in front of more eyeballs, generate more revenue faster as a result, to find businesses out there that had the exact same target customer, but a non-competitive product, so that 1 + 1 = 2 if you cross-promoted each other. And so when I started Smart Charter, it was kind of like the same sort of thinking. Back then, when I started that company, I think of it this way. If you're a commercial airline, and I think back at that time, there were 6 or 7 commercial airlines, like American, United, Southwest, Delta, Virgin. What you would do is take all of your schedule, your entire inventory, and you would upload it to these things called GDSs. They were like master databases, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you would do is you would if you did a search like on Expedia, it would ping one of those master databases with all the schedules. Super simple. So 6 airlines going into one thing, you do a search, you can book a flight. The problem was that did not exist in private aviation. You had 7,500 operators. The average one had 3 planes, and there was no central place, no central marketplace for buying and selling. And so that's the problem we decided to solve. Yep. And when we were looking for the right partner, we went and we found Virgin. And so that was kind of how that whole thing came together.
Fantastic. We're coming up against our break. This is Success Profiles Radio. We're with Scott Duffy. We're going to talk about a lot of things when we come back.
Mission is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
It's words you never heard.
English isn't always the most expressive language in the world. Many other languages have words that are much more descriptive in their meaning. University of East London psychologist Tim Lomas compiled words from other countries that don't translate or have an English equivalent. Peiskos is a Norwegian word that means sitting in front of a crackling fireplace enjoying the warmth. Gula is Spanish for the desire to eat simply for the taste. And shamomajamo is a Georgian word that means eating past the point of satiation due to sheer enjoyment. Feierabend is a German word for the festive mood at the end of a working day. To quote Mark Twain, the difference between the right word and the nearly right word is the difference between lightning and lightning bug.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest is Scott Duffy. He's a business expert. He helps people raise money. He helps people create breakthroughs in their businesses. He's a multi-time best-selling author, and we have so much to explore and unravel. And if you've not subscribed and downloaded Success Profiles Radio on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please do that. Leave a five-star review. That would mean a lot to me. I would love that. So, Scott, if you were to choose to start your own company, how do you know if you're sitting on a billion-dollar idea or not?
How do you know if you're sitting on a billion-dollar idea?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. That's really funny. So I had a similar, this is going to sound kind of cheesy, but I asked Richard Branson a similar question one time. Mm. So we were at this Virgin CEO conference thing, and it was at his home in Necker. And I asked him, I said, what is your formula? You have $5 billion businesses. At that time, that's what he had. $5 billion businesses. Like, how do you do that? And it was interesting because his answer was really simple. He said, Scott, what I do is I look for really big markets where people already have their wallet out. So two things I learned from that. One, most people are afraid to go into a really big market. They think it's too competitive already. They think it's going to cost too much to market in that, you know, in that particular thing. And he's like, you know, the first idea is to look for a really big market, and people already have their wallets out, meaning I don't have to teach them to buy or spend anything. Their wallet's open and they're already spending on this stuff. And then what I do is I find one person and I ask them, what is one problem that you have in this space? And if I ask enough people, what is the one problem that they have in this space? What I start to find is patterns. If I solve that one problem for that one person and it's a big market, it's a billion-dollar business. And that's how I've created $5 billion businesses. And that's what he shared.
I love that. That's brilliant, because being an entrepreneur really does mean that you are solving problems for people. And the bigger problem you can solve, the more money that you can potentially make. That's absolutely fantastic. So you've had coaches and mentors along the way. I mean, you worked for Tony Robbins. You got to work with Richard Branson. They have both been excellent mentors for you. How has that catapulted your career, and how do you find the right one for you?
Well, I think when it comes to mentors, I think that there's never like a one size fits all mentor that mm-hmm. is going to be the person that kind of like is able to help you through every area of your life. So, you know, there's really when we ask for help, there's really two types of help that we can receive. The first is opinion, and the second is counsel. Mm-hmm. An opinion comes from people that maybe they want to help you. Maybe they just love you to death. They want to help you. They want to do the right thing for you. They want to go all they so want to do the right thing, but here's the problem. They don't have any direct personal experience solving the problem that you need to.
Yeah.
So anything that they share with you is nothing more than an educated guess. It could come from a place of love, but it's just a guess.
Right.
Versus counsel. Now, counsel comes from people that have actually walked in those shoes that you want to walk in. Like they've experienced the problem firsthand. They built something first. They've done what you want to accomplish firsthand. So it's really important, number one, to always be seeking counsel versus opinion. The second thing is, if you're seeking counsel versus opinion, then you may need someone who's your counselor around, let's say, fitness, and a counselor around business, and a mm-hmm. counselor around how to manage your finances. So this idea that there's a one size fits all never kind of works. And so that's what I've learned.
Absolutely. What do you think stops people from becoming millionaires?
What stops them from becoming millionaires?
Yeah.
I can tell you the fastest way somebody close to being a millionaire like puts them back. And that's that they've spent all of their time and energy trying to figure out how to make $1 million. And then they bring that money in, and then it's like, oh, wait, what do I do with it? So like they made it, but then they never learned what to do with it while they were making it. And so it comes, and this is why so many people who make $1 million, I think it's, what is it, 80%? It's a really mm-hmm. high percentage, actually lose that first $1 million. And by the way, if you're kind of more middle age in your life, if you're later in your life, in your 40s, you're in your 50s, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting is that when you take a look And who in this country is a millionaire, self-made millionaire, and keeps their money? That business where they keep their money on average is started by somebody today that's 46 mm-hmm. years old.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think that just because maybe you had a business and you made money and maybe you lost it or something happened, or don't think that you're done, because you're not. You're just getting started. And when you think about that statistic, I mean, the average person who makes $1 million and they keep the million and they grow it is almost 50 years old today when they start that particular business.
Yeah, that's amazing. Here's a question that I really, really want to ask, because you've heard of the idea that there are people who are visionaries and there are people who are implementers. So in your businesses, are you the person that comes up with the big ideas, or are you the person who's really good at implementing them? Which one are you better at?
I'm better at the big idea. I'm better at kind of the early stage startup stuff. I'm really good at that. So I can roll up my sleeves and I can set everything up and I can bring in the team. And I can whatever. I got to get out. And mm-hmm. I think that one of the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make, actually there's two, is they overcommit and they overposition. They overposition themselves. And what does that mean? What that means is they keep themselves in the wrong role in their company for too long. It's kind of like most entrepreneurs believe that in order to be the most important person in the company they started, they have to be the CEO of the company. And that's entirely untrue. Look, you're either a visionary, like Brian was saying, you're an operator, or you're an implementer, or what I call a sharpshooter. Like, you're really great at one particular skill. Like, you're an awesome coder or artist or salesperson. And the thing that's most important, you know, the most important skill for any entrepreneur is this. It's self-awareness. What you have to understand is what you're good at, and you need to fire yourself from every other position in the company and put yourself only in that role. And you'll find that when you do that, if you hire the right people around you, you will grow further, faster, and with far less capital than you ever imagined.
I love that, because when I asked my guest last week, what is the most valuable, highest value skill you can learn? He said recognizing patterns and being able to do something with it, which I thought was really insightful.
You know, so what I think is interesting about that is I think that's a skill. And I think it's a skill that one of those three, I'm not sure, it's a skill. And probably I'm going to guess that the operator may be a little bit better at recognizing certain patterns and then kind of knowing what to do and kind of how to implement and things like that. But yeah, that's very insightful.
Absolutely. So let's just say that you are at a place in your company where you want to start scaling. Some people think they need to raise money. Other people prefer to bootstrap. How do you know which of those two things you should be doing?
Well, I think that the number one thing you need to understand at that point is you have to understand the economics behind your business.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a huge problem that people make when they're scaling. They don't understand their economic drivers. So they don't really know where their income is coming from. They don't really know where their leads are coming from. They don't really know where their costs. And so what happens is they tend to invest when they're trying to scale in all the wrong things. Mm-hmm. They invest in the wrong products when they should be killing them. They invest in building stuff that their customer doesn't want because they didn't understand the economic drivers of the business. They do all those things. So that's the number one thing. You got to understand the economic drivers of your business.
Yeah, that is absolutely important. Let's just say that you do want to raise money after all, because you've done this in some of your companies. How do you know if it's better to get a loan or if you should give up equity in your company? I'm sure there are criteria that you have in mind when you consider that, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a very difficult time today to raise mm-hmm. capital. You know, last year, they said that it was the worst year in the last 50 years in America to raise money for a startup company. And this year it's gotten worse. And so what that means is it's harder to find the right investor, and it's harder to sell equity in your company for a valuation that's fair, that you might think is the entrepreneur's fair. Today we tend to have to give up more than we thought we would have to give up in order to bring in the money. When it comes to a loan, loans are also fairly challenging to get right now for earlier stage companies as well. I mean, for the average Series A, Series B company, a business line of credit is up around 19%. Mm. I was checking yesterday, I was checking on Friday, and the average SBA loan, you know, I was getting an SBA loan during COVID that was like almost zero. Like it was just the interest rate was so low for all of us. And now I think it's closer to 11%. Mm. And so, you know, I think that here's what I'd be thinking about if I needed to bring in some cash to my business. One of the things I'd be thinking about is, let's start with the loan. So obviously the most important things you have to consider with a loan are what is the amount of the loan? What is the term or the length of the loan? And is this going to be simple or compound interest that I'm paying off of? Okay. So how much? What's the length of the term of the loan? Is it simple or is it compound interest? Then I have to understand, is my credit going to be worthy in today's market of being able to go out and get the kind of money that I need for my business? Now, let's say that you can, and let's say you can get a decent interest rate. Yeah. What is cool? And by the way, there's a lot of lenders out there that used to try and get equity in businesses kind of pre last year. And now what they're doing is they're actually more comfortable lending versus investing for equity. And when they lend, they're going to want a personal guarantee, but that's why they're more interested in the lending side. Now, if you can get the loan, what's cool about that is you don't have a board, you don't have investors, you don't have other people that are kind of in and up and in your business that you're effectively reporting to. And so, so for a lot of people, a loan is totally the right way to go. And having leverage could be the right way to go. When it comes to raising money, you know, you just have to understand that if you're raising capital today, you know, you're going to, if you start today, you're looking at probably a 9, 10, 11 month process. That's about the speed right now for an early stage company. And you're also in a position where you're going to be giving up probably 10 to 15% more equity than you would have a year ago for the same amount of money, because that's where the market is right now. And you're going to have investors and people kind of in your business. So I would just kind of like look at both of those different things and figure out what's right for me.
Absolutely. We're coming up against our next break. I can't believe how quickly this is going. We will be right back. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Surveys show that 81% of people wish they could, but many never do. If you're one of those people, I can tell you why. You don't think you have time, you may not know how, or you might not believe you are a good enough writer. When you're working with an experienced coach, these reasons go away because I will help you every step of the way. If you want to know more about how to write a nonfiction book, whether it's business, self-help, or how-to, reach out to me at www.briankwright.com for more information. Once again, that's briankwright.com.
If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With PhoneSites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With PhoneSites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at PhoneSites.com/Brian. Once again, that's PhoneSites.com/Brian.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. And this show will clearly demonstrate the principles, if I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio. And here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Scott Duffy, and we are talking about raising venture capital versus getting loans. That's our current topic. And so what I wanted to ask you next, Scott, was when you are looking for venture capital, what are some of the do's and don'ts that you need to adhere to find funding and be successful at it?
It's such an important question because so this is one of the things I do most with entrepreneurs is I help them to strategically think about how they're going to pull the capital together for their business, whether it's on the lending side or whether you're going out there and you're selling part of your business, you're selling equity for money. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people I meet that are, they'll go out there and they'll start calling on potential investors. Mm-hmm. And they'll sit down, they'll call me, and they'll be like super pumped, or they'll text me and they're like, hey, I'm going out to meet so-and-so. And they wanted to meet with me, and the meeting's over, and they text me and they call me, oh my gosh, it went great. And then it's like crickets. Mm-hmm. Then they don't hear anything back from that person. And they're wondering what went wrong. And the answer is that they're talking to all the wrong people. Now here's what I mean. The most important place to start when you're raising money, and I got to tell you, if you've been raising money, you've had trouble, if this is your first time, this is probably the most important lesson that you could ever learn about raising capital. Mm-hmm. The place that you start is by developing your target investor avatar. And I'll tell you mm-hmm. why. Your target investor avatar, the perfect representation of the kind of person that's going to invest in your specific kind of business. And here's why. Investors are in the business of not only making money, but also mitigating their risk. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they tend to invest in things that they know, things they understand, so they can properly evaluate a deal. And if the business is going sideways after they've invested, they can help, they can contribute. And so people invest in stuff that they know. So, you know, as an example, if you take a technology deal to a real estate investor, there's disconnect. And the same if you do it the other way around. So mm-hmm. the first thing I always want to know is, number one, where did this person make their money? What industry, mm-hmm. what kind of product, where do they make their money? Number two, I want to know at what stage, and this is really important, write it down, at what stage do these people invest? Do they invest at the idea stage? Do they invest when you have a product built, when you're generating sales, when you're in the market, when you're generating a certain amount of EBITDA? Like, at what stage do they come into a company? Number three is, what is their expectation for their return on investment? Do they want 1x their money, 2x their money, or they like a Silicon Valley VC and they want 45% or 45 times what they put into the business in order for that to be a success to them? And is your business the kind of business that can produce those types of results? So what is their expectation for ROI? Next is, when do they expect to get their capital back? Mm-hmm. Meaning, do they want to see their capital back quickly? I want it back in 18 months. I want it back in 24 months. Or are they long-term investors and they'll sit and they'll ride it with you for the next 10 years? Next, I want to know, what is their decision-making process? Is it the person I'm speaking to? Is there another person involved that I don't know about? Does this mm-hmm. go to a board or to a group? Yeah. And then finally, I want to know kind of the timing that it takes in order to make a decision. So, like, let me just walk through that real quick. So, mm-hmm. you know, number one, I want to know, where do they make their money? Number two, what stage of investment or what stage of a business do they go in and invest? Number three, which I forgot, what is their average size check? Mm-hmm. What's the average size check? If you ask somebody for $1 million and they write an investment check on average of 10,000, you have a mm-hmm. problem.
Right.
If you ask somebody for 10,000, but they can only write in their firm a minimum size check of $1 million, you got a problem.
Right.
So again, where do they make their money? What stage? Average size check. Next, expectation for return on investment. Next, mm-hmm. when do you expect to see your money back? And finally, mm-hmm. what is your decision-making process? Now, here's the thing. Where do you get all this information? You get all this information on the first call, the first meet. And how does mm-hmm. that happen? The way it happens is this. You get on the phone, you get in the Zoom, right? You get in the car and you get in front of somebody and you sit down. The first thing you do is you do introductions. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about whatever. And then always have them start. Mm-hmm. Tell me about yourself first. You start telling me about yourself. At the end, you say, do you mind if I ask you a couple more questions just with regard to investing? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, sure. Okay. I'm curious. What stage do you like to go into a company? You know, what is your average size check? And you go through the list that I just gave you. Now, yeah. Here's the thing. You are going to sound like such a pro to this person. And in a matter of a minute or two, you're going to know if they're even qualified to be in your deal.
Right.
See, the mistake that we make is that we spend all of our time focused on all the wrong people. Now, if they're the right people, awesome. If this isn't the right person, because you look so professional and so buttoned up, I guarantee you they'll say, this isn't right for me, but let me tell you who this is right for. Mm-hmm. It always happens.
Wow. I love that. So let's just say that we want to sell our company someday. How can we increase the value of our company before that sale happens?
So I'd say there's two things to focus on. The first is, I always say that you want to begin with the end in mind. So you want to have a sense of, with this particular business, directionally, who is it that would potentially acquire you? And you say, I don't want to get bought. I don't want to get acquired. I want to keep this business forever. Here's the thing. There are all kinds of reasons that people sell mm-hmm. businesses. Somebody gets sick. You get bored of it. You got to move. Like, you got to, a parent moves, like whatever it is. All kinds of reasons. So from the very beginning, you got to make sure that your business is going to be the kind of business that will be attractive down the road to a buyers, even if today you don't think that you want to sell it.
Right.
Now what you have to do is you have to figure out, based on kind of who that potential buyer pool is, you want to know, how do they look at their financial data? Okay. How do they do their accounting? How do they look at their income, their expenses? What are the key metrics that they track? And you want to track all the same stuff. And the reason is, when you get to the time or the point where you're ready to sell and you have all of this, for them, it will be so easy to make a decision, because they're looking at your numbers exactly the way that they look at theirs. It's just one of those things that makes you look more buttoned up, and it increases your valuation. The other thing that you want to do is, if you know, what I always do with businesses is, if we're going to go and we're going to try and sell them, I want to get an independent valuation. I want to know what the value is from an outside bank that they would place on this company. Now, you have to understand, you got two kinds of revenue, okay? You have one-time sales, and then you have subscription revenue, okay? MRR, monthly recurring revenue, or ARR, annual recurring revenue. Now, if you have, let's say you have 50-50. Let's say you're selling $100 a year of stuff, $100 mm-hmm. a year. $50 is one-time sales. Like, somebody buys something, you'll hear from them again. And $50 is in subscription sales. When the bank looks at your business, they're going to value one-time sales at 1x. They're worth one time the amount of those sales. So if you have $50 in sales, they're worth $50.
Yeah.
They're not worth much, because you got to go and you got to find new people all over again.
Mm-hmm.
The subscription revenue, on the other hand, that $50 is valued at 5 to 10 times that number. So your $50 is worth $250, or if you get a good valuation, $500. So your one time is $50, your subscription revenue is $500.
Hmm.
So here's my point. My point is this: the fastest way to increase the value of your business, if you want to sell, is to convert as much one-off sales, as much single sales as you can, mm-hmm. into subscription sales.
Yeah.
And as soon as you do that, you'll find that your business is worth 5 to 10 times more, like literally overnight.
Yeah. Is that because there are studies that show that when you have a subscription-based business, that's where the attrition starts happening, is 5 or 10 cycles into your subscription?
That's actually a really good question. I've never looked at it that way.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask somebody. That's a really good question. I think that the value of a subscription sale to a buyer is we don't have to prove ourselves, redo the work, refine new customers, over and over and over again. Yeah. Instead, what we can do is we can continue to add value to our existing customers, mm-hmm. to get them to stay longer and reduce their churn.
Absolutely.
And so if we can just do that. Look, I remember talking to Chad. So for those of you who don't know, if you want to go buy maybe the best book on sales ever written, one of the top two or three of all time, mm-hmm. The Ultimate Sales Machine from Chet Holmes is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was talking to Chet one day, and we were talking about how to increase your company's value and how to increase your sales. And he said, look, Scott, there's a couple ways you can do it. Number one is, you can go and you can make new stuff. You just launch new, like make new products and sell them. Number two is, you can raise your prices. You can raise your prices. Number three is, you can go to your best buyers. You can go to your best buyers, find out what they want, and sell them more. go sell more stuff. And he always defaulted on a best buyer strategy. And so what he said, it's the easiest thing to do. So when I look at SaaS or subscription sales, to me, those are my best buyers, right? What I want to do is just keep adding more value is what I want to do. Now, the trick, here's the trick. The trick is to keep adding more value, but not to significantly increase the price of the product. Because when you do that, you run into something called the innovator's dilemma. And in short, the innovator's dilemma is this. The innovator's dilemma is you go out there and you put a product out in the market. And let's say, just for as an example, let's say it's $9.99 a month. Okay. $9.99 a month. And this product does one thing. It solves one very specific problem for one person. And it's really good at doing that. And it's a SaaS product, and you dig it and you set it and you forget it and you use it every day. What happens is over time, that company becomes really successful and they have more people. They need more infrastructure. They need more office space. They got to buy more computers, all that kind of stuff. Their costs continue to go up, but they want to they want to maintain their profit margins or increase their profit margins. So what they do is they add more stuff, more products, more features, but they charge for everything.
Yeah.
And then 2 years down the road, you wake up and you look at your bill and it's not $9.99 anymore. It's $99.99 a month.
Yeah.
And so then what happens is some entrepreneur gets pissed off and they're like, I don't want all that. I just want the first thing. And by the way, you can make the first thing better with today's technology. I'm going to go build it. They go on LinkedIn. They find three engineers that say, yeah, I'll do that too. Everyone contributes. They launch the product in 6 months. Here's the problem. They launched that original, the most popular product for free. And now that company that started to charge too much because with all of its infrastructure, it can't give it away for $9.
Yeah.
It's the innovator's dilemma. It doesn't know what to do. So that is one of the ways that smart entrepreneurs go in and disrupt entire markets is they look for those dilemmas and they solve them.
Fantastic. We're coming up against our final break. I can't believe how fast this is going. We could easily go 2 hours, easily, but we only have one more segment to go, and we will take care of that when we come back. This is Success Profiles Radio. Please stay with us. Don't go away. We will be coming right back, and we will talk about his AI Mavericks company, which is an event management and planning company around AI. Exciting stuff. We live in exciting times. We'll be right back.
Is to motivate and inspire others to discover their unique talents and follow their dreams in life. This is Success Profiles Radio.
If you are in business, what is the number one thing that stops revenue growth? Not having enough leads. Data is the new gold rush. With PhoneSites, that is never an issue. You can generate as many leads as you want without paying a lead broker. With PhoneSites, you can build a website or sales funnel from your mobile device in 5 minutes or less without any technical skills or without downloading an app. It's easy and you have nothing to lose. Try it for free for 14 days at PhoneSites.com/Brian. Once again, that's PhoneSites.com/Brian.
Notice that no matter how carefully you put the Christmas lights away, they still come out all kringle-crangled and jitterty-jitterty the next year. Christmas tree lights were invented in 1882 by Thomas Edison, and by 1900, these miniature versions of his electric light bulb were being advertised to the public. In 1895, Grover Cleveland proudly sponsored the first electrically lit Christmas tree in the White House, featuring more than 100 multicolored lights. By the next Christmas, members of high society were hosting flambustious Christmas tree parties. Of course, in those early days, the services of a wireman had to be obtained, as many people had considered electricity as a bit of a bugaboo.
It's Marching Day.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
Welcome back to Success Profiles Radio. So many people live their lives wanting more than they currently have. and this show will clearly demonstrate the principles. If I can do it, you can do it. So let's get back to the show. This is Success Profiles Radio, and here again is your host, Brian K. Wright.
And we are back. This is Success Profiles Radio. My very special guest this week is Scott Duffy. And if you have not subscribed to Ultimate Achievers Magazine, you can go to ultimateachieversmagazine.com. And there was a month a while ago where Scott Duffy was the cover. So read about all that. You can read every issue that we've done since December 2017. If you read one issue a week, it would take you longer than a year to go through all the content on that site. And the subscription is really reasonable. Go to ultimateachieversmagazine.com and get your subscription today. I would be very, very honored if you would do that. So Scott, you and I had a conversation a couple years ago. And after we got done talking, you said, what do I need next in my business? And I was stumped. And you said, can I tell you a secret? I said, yeah, most successful entrepreneurs that I know already know the answer to this. They always know what you need next. And so I will ask you, how do we know what we need next?
You know what? They know two things. They know what they need and they know what they're willing to pay for it. And that's a really important distinction. And I think that the reason I bring that up is, you know, if you're a person, like, this is a great little trick. If you're a person that is in transition right now, or maybe you got to pick up a little bit, you want to pick up a little bit of extra cash or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I just don't know what to do. Here's what you do. You just start talking to everybody that you know, and you say, hey, what is it that you need? By the way, I'm a really resourceful guy or a really resourceful girl. What are you willing to pay for it? If I can find that for you, or maybe I might even be able to do that myself. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. The more successful the person I talk to, the faster they know what they need, and they always know what they're willing to pay for it. And I think that's really important. What I think happens sometimes with entrepreneurs is we're afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or when somebody asks us, it's almost like we like burp. It's like we don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
And I think that what I found is when you're an entrepreneur, sometimes you're caught in this mode where you're like giving and giving and giving and giving. You're giving to your business, you're giving to your employees, you're giving to this, you're giving your soul, whatever. You're giving, giving, giving. And sometimes we lose or kind of like we shut off our ability to receive. Now, by the way, there's a problem with that. The moment that we shut off our ability to receive, we start attracting the opposite energy into our lives. Mm. So we attract takers all around us is what happens. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Let's spend some time talking about your adventures in the AI space, because you have a company called AI Mavericks and you are speaking at an event in Utah this week. So tell us about AI Mavericks and what you do.
Yeah. So AI Mavericks is it's a community that I've been building. So the number one AI and business growth community in the world. And we work with founders, with CEOs, with leadership teams that want to build great companies, and they want to learn how to make AI an important part of their business growth strategy. And like so many people out there, like most people out there, the people that come to us are typically stuck between this like fear of missing out and the fear of jumping in.
Yeah.
It's like they don't want to miss out and they think everybody else has got it figured out, but they also don't want to jump in because they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And they're the kind of people that have been on their toes for the last year. They like subscribe to every single AI newsletter out there. But today, the first thing they do when they wake up is they delete them all because it's just so overwhelming.
Yeah. And so, I'm on your email list and you have been sending out emails about this fairly regularly lately. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And I'll tell you about that too in just a second. So what we do is we just simplify everything. We help these people figure out what their AI vision is, their strategy, their execution plan, and all of that kind of stuff. We don't talk at 50,000 feet. I don't talk about the world in 50 years. We talk about what you can use today. And by the way, today, most of these tools are fairly clunky. It's just because we're so early. So you think about this, you know, we're 18 months in right now to ChatGPT's launch. 18 months into the consumer internet, which was the first half of 1996, the biggest company on the hardware side was MCI WorldCom.
Oh, gosh.
They got you on the internet. The biggest company on the software side was Netscape, which didn't exist just a few years later. And the biggest software kind of solution that sat on top of it, or the biggest application that sat on top of the Netscape, was Yahoo, that didn't even have search. It was just a directory of links.
Yeah.
that's where we are now with AI.
Yeah.
So what, one of the things that we do is we serve as the case study, and we're constantly doing these case studies to show you what works, what doesn't work and stuff like that. So you mentioned my newsletter. So I look at AI as nothing more than a tool, and a tool that we can use as business leaders to solve problems. So a problem that I've had is with my newsletter. It's how do I go out there and how do I have the time to create the content, to send it out to them? It's a lot of work. So I reached out to one of my friends, Joe. Joe Stolte started a company. I believe Peter Diamandis is involved also. And it's called daily.ai. And they are an AI generated newsletter service. Mm-hmm. And so what we did up front is I spent about 2 hours really getting clear on what I wanted to teach and what I wanted to do with that newsletter. And then what I did is I found all across the internet my favorite sources of information, and we trained the AI on all of this. And then it took about two, three weeks to train the AI. I gave it links to all of the articles I've written for Entrepreneur, like 50 of them, and it started to learn my voice. And then about 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, I got my first newsletter, and I was like, oh my gosh, right? And so now what's happening with a list that hadn't been mailed to in four years, our average open rate is close to 30%.
Wow.
And the industry average is under 1%, it's 30%. And then once people are inside the email, they're clicking 60% of the time on a story or something that we have in there. Because what's happening is the AI every week is learning what people like, how they like it written, where they're clicking, where they're going, and it's constantly optimizing. So that's just an example of a tool and the kind of thing that we share at these events.
Oh, that is absolutely cool. So tell us a little bit about this event you're speaking at.
Yeah, well, so AI Mavericks is, we're a mastermind, and our next event is in May. So we do January and May and September, the third week of each one of those months every year. And then we do a monthly virtual event as well. And each month, that monthly virtual, we pick a different part of your company and we share some of the top tools being used in that particular area, whether it's sales or marketing or finance or whatever, our case studies and experiences using those tools to help to train you and to train your teams as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So what do you think are the most common questions your audience has about AI? I'm sure it's changing because the technology is evolving so quickly.
Yeah. So the most common question people have is, where do I start? I'm so overwhelmed. Where do I start? Yeah. Trying to raise money for my business. I'm told I've got to be like, have AI, like, where do I start? Yeah. I open up my browser and everywhere I look in the news, it says that everyone's used, where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is simple. The answer is you start by solving one problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I take people through a process where we map out, here's an organization, right? Here's a chart. Here's your sales team, your marketing team, your tech team, or this team, all these different teams, right? Departments. What is one problem that you want to solve in each one of those areas that will smooth out a workflow, that will make you more efficient, that could reduce headcount, that could improve your margins? One problem that you want to solve, and what is the outcome, the specific outcome that you want to get out of that? And then what we do is we tell you, out of all these departments, let's choose one. Let's choose one problem in one department and let's start there. And then what we do is we try and find a tool, an existing tool that we can use and we can match up to that problem in order to get you to that result. I'm really big on mitigating risk. I'm really big on this idea of making small bets. And that's what we're doing, is we're making small bets, because sometimes things work brilliantly, these AI tools. Sometimes they're a step short. So I'll give you an example. So like, you know, I shave my head, right? And and I've been doing this for forever. And I went on, you know, 6 months ago to all of those like cool little AI photo generators on your phone. And I upload an image. This is how I started, actually, AI Mavericks. If you look at our website, there's a cover photo and I'm like wearing a sport coat and stuff. I didn't want that photo. I wanted some like cool thing to be like, it's like a Roman gladiator, right?
Oh, yeah.
or something like crazy. But every time I ran it on every app, even though I'm bald and I uploaded the picture, I would have this crazy mane of hair, right? Mm-hmm. So it didn't work. So I had to throw up a picture. Or like I'm using something called HeyGen right now. So one of the problems I had in my last mastermind is before each event, what I would do is I would get on my phone and I would do a personal welcome for each person attending an event. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that was really different was their name. But imagine on your phone making 100 videos and texting 100 videos, mm-hmm. and then after another 100 videos, a lot of work. Yeah. So what I was told is I called a friend and I said, how do I solve this problem using AI? And they referred me to a tool that they use. And the idea was all I have to do is upload two video samples that are 3 minutes, 3:35 each. I need to upload a voice sample. I upload a script and I upload a list of names that I want it customized for. Hit a button and the AI goes to work. And all of a sudden I have 100 messages.
Wow.
Like at the click of a button. So I tried it. Now, when I wanted to do it for one person, so like it wasn't customized, it spit it out. It was awesome. When I wanted to do it for that many people, here's what I didn't realize. I didn't realize that it wasn't doing batch rendering. So every video that it created had to be rendered. And so with 200 video, or let's say 100 videos before my event, I was told I'd need somebody sitting in front of the computer for 3 days to make sure that it rendered. Mm. And all the videos went through the right way. Oh. So my point about this is there's so much great stuff out there that's going to do so many great things. We want to help you to find out what will work in your business today.
Right.
And that's our goal.
Fantastic. We've got less than a minute until the end. So Scott, how can we find you? How can we learn more about you and be in your community?
Sure. Go to AIMavericks.ai, AIMavericks.ai. That's the best way to connect. You can also follow me on social media at Scott Duffy Media across all channels at Scott Duffy Media.
Fantastic. Scott, thank you so much for being here. It was an honor and a privilege to have you back once again.
So good to be here. And Brian, I just love you to death. I love your show. Your content is amazing. Please keep it up.
I certainly will. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been Success Profiles Radio. Join us every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, where I interview another world-class achiever, learn what they did, what they overcame, and the lessons we can learn along the way. Please come back next week. I can't wait to have you back, and we'll have another amazing guest next time. Take care, everyone. Goodbye. Have a terrific week.
Thank you for being a part of Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian K. Wright. Each week, we'll explore different aspects of success and how to apply them to your life. We'll have guests that will come from many different backgrounds, including expertise in leadership, business, relationships, careers, networking, health, overcoming adversity, and much more. For more on Brian and the show, check out his website, BrianKWright.com. If you've ever wondered if there's more to life than you're currently living, then Success Profiles Radio is the program for you. Join us again next week for more Success Profiles Radio with your host, Brian.